Go for it, Shanks.
Thank you.
I'll just look pretty.
So, Phil, thank you for taking time out and speaking to us about your experiences on the Lions. Have you met Flats before?
I think he sort of came later on in the Bath team after me, and I've watched him on TV, and
he
speaks very eloquently. Yeah. I don't know what he's like as a player.
Don't
Tom.
Feed him. Don't feed him.
No, right? We'll never get home.
It's like going to the zoo.
no hands.
But we're obviously here to talk about the Lions, and what's your first memory of the British and Irish Lions? How old were you?
You know, as a young boy, gents, I remember the radio in those days, obviously no TV. Listening to my heroes from Llanelli playing for the Lions, people perhaps you won't remember, R.H. Williams, regarded, Colin Meads says, one of the hardest men he ever played against. So for Colin Meads to say that makes me very, very proud. Centre D.K. Jones, Ken Jones, went on the 62 Lions tour, so I'm listening on the radio there. But one memory always comes back to me. I went out with Wales to New Zealand, 68-69, Barry John, Gareth Edwards, Jill, and they thrashed us.
Yeah.
You know, the All Blacks, we were supposed to be the best team. And there was a gentleman on that tour called Ivor Jones, who captained the Scarlets for about 7 or 8 seasons.
Yeah.
And we'd gone with the Lions tour early days, very, very early days. And the respect he had from the New Zealand public and everyone there. And I was saying, what makes him so special? He is one of the greatest wing forwards to have ever toured New Zealand from any other country in the world. And they still remembered him 40, 50 years later. And I thought, God, that's what being a British Lions success means, out in New Zealand or out in South Africa. So those are my early memories of just, you know, my heroes playing.
Yeah.
And then really very quickly, when I joined the Scarlets as a young kid, 17, 18, captained in those days by Delmy Thomas.
Yeah.
One season, Norma Gale, one season. I'm going on the pitch with Delmy Thomas, 3 times a British Lion, you know, played against the greats in the world. And he's such a great guy. And he's telling stories about the Lions. So I was sold on the Lions from a very early age, and then lucky to play with some of the great players.
I'm always interested to know how people find out, because we know how they find out these days. There's a million different ways to find out you're going on to, but how did you find out you were going on your first Lions tour? I take it you didn't get tweeted about it.
No tweets, no phones. We didn't have a phone.
Pitcher.
I've been married about 2 years, living in a nice village, main street in the village, and the postman came every day, 9 o'clock, spot on, one of the rugby boys, you know, so I knew it was having made. And somebody said, you're going to go on the tour. Nobody told me, but all these whispers, and everybody's going to have a letter like 9 o'clock Monday morning. So up he turns, 9 o'clock Monday morning. You know, it gives me 2 letters. I think, yes, you know, I opened the first one, it's a gas bill. I thought, oh, great. Second one's a terrible bill. I can't believe it. I'm not going on tour. I'm breaking my heart. And he walks away about 10, 15 yards and he stopped and he came back.
Oh, did you?
And he said, this is what you waiting for, is it? I said, you.
Perfect.
You know, but that was the amateur way we were done.
Yeah.
And all the Welsh boys were phoning, have you had a letter? Yeah. Oh, I had a great, you know. But that's so amateur. Sad in many ways, but yet great in many ways.
Great.
You know
yeah.
I think
these boys now are like meeting up sort of three weeks prior to the tour. You know, how was it with you in 74?
Well, you know, you got the letter to say you'd been chosen, and then you didn't hear a thing. And then somebody came through. And I mean this, gents, we're off in 3 weeks' time. I thought, well, that's come quickly. You are now required to go up to the Cardiff Arms Park, it was called in those days, to have a fitness test to make sure you're fit to go on this tour. Well, what a fitness test. 2 laps of the pitch, 5 sit-ups, 5 press-ups. Yeah, get on your order.
You
get on
this tour.
Honest to God. You're fit to go, get on there. And I thought, Jesus, that's a hell of a fitness test.
Yeah, your arms and legs basically work,
you can go. You can go, like, you know. And then, really, you know, a letter from the International Rugby Union Board or the British Lions saying, report to this hotel in London at a such and such a time. And it was my job, I had to pick the lunatic up called Bobby Windsor, the hooker from,
God.
Don't be late, here's my address. Dear God, picked him up, going down all the way to London. He was thinking of all the bad things he could do, asking me things like, what's this bloke, Willie John McBride? Like? I says, Bobby's had 5 Lions tours. He's the greatest Lion ever. Well, I know all that. He said, but does he like fighting and kicking and punching? Oh, I don't know, Bob. Being an Irishman, I'm sure he'll have a scrap. Oh, I can't wait to fight. Oh, I can't wait to fight. I was thinking, I was 3.5-4 months of this lunatic, like, you know. And but that's how it was, you know. And gents, meeting the boys in the hotel.
Yeah.
Some of them I played against, Ireland, Scotland, England, etc. But didn't really get to know them. And I can honestly say, I think Willie John played a great part because we were kept a lot of the time indoors because he anti-apartheid demonstrators, thousands of them outside the hotel.
Yeah, of course.
But he built a bond and a friendship up there. And Willie's code was, men, trust each other. And he said the big word for me, loyalty. So that was incredible. So we flew out to South Africa 4 or 5 days later, really bonded as a team, which was incredible, really, because we didn't have a lot of chance to get out to mix.
Because you had, you know, steel workers, bankers, solicitors, farmers, all different types of professions.
What's funny, gents? You know, I say the word posh. It's easier. They all understand. Yeah, yeah. The lads from London in the city, you know what I mean? Bankers, solicitors, lawyers. They were coming, what do you say? Is he real about Bobby? He can't be. He's not mad as that. Yes, yeah, he is mad.
Are these people real? Well,
yeah, yeah, they couldn't believe it. And, you know, Bobby and a couple of the boys. And they said, hey, we've got 3.5 or 4 months for this. I'm not sharing with them. I said, boys, you've got to share. You've got to
never
mix it up.
Like,
you know, never seen anything played against him. Like, you know, and he was wild, you know. And but what was great, that everybody respected each other.
Yeah.
You know, if you were a steelworker, guy cleaning the streets, a miner, a steel, a tin picker, doesn't matter, as long as you mixed in and had respect for each other, and that's what was the big thing.
I tell you, Bobby Windsor sounds like Andy Powell.
Yeah, he does a bit. Wild man.
Wild.
But funny bones.
Do you know, he was the life and soul of the party, and, you know, Willie John loved him because he knew that, you know, he could trust on Bobby. If he'd said, we're going to war over the top tomorrow, he knew the first man behind him would be Bobby Windsor.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you talk about you being away for that long, it seems alien to blokes like us to be on tour for any more than really 4 weeks is pretty punchy these days. It's generally a bit short. The Lions tours are a bit longer, but you had some long trips, didn't you? How did you kind of survive that long away from home?
Well, I think the first trip, you're so excited. You're a British Lion. You know, you've achieved, you've been lucky enough to play for Wales Schoolboys, Wales Youth, Wales Senior Team. You've achieved everything. And then this final accolade comes your way. And you're so proud to go on that tour. Mm. I must admit, I have to say this, gents, I mean this since maybe the serious point I have to bring up. My wife was pregnant, we've been married 2 or 3 years, we're expecting our first child. She went away like that, and I'm thinking, hell, I'm going away for 4 months here nearly, and Pat's going to go through the summer carrying our baby boy, our baby. And when I came home, I really dropped a goalie. We met at Heathrow Airport, and by this time she's out there. Yeah, I said, do you put on weight, love? I'm like, Jesus Christ, I didn't go down very well.
I didn't go down well at all.
Like, and I thought, you know, we came home, and two things stand out in my mind. I came home exhausted to my village of Wellingwall, and she didn't say anything about what was going to happen. And about 5 o'clock, I said, oh, let's chill out, sit down. She said, I'm afraid to say, she said, half past five, there's a knock coming on the door. I said, what do you mean a knock? The village and the town have arranged a homecoming party for you. Oh, Jesus. I've been drinking beer for 4 months. No, I think, oh, please no. Half past five, awesome cart outside. Must have been 5,000 people filling the streets to the village park and a homecoming party there. To the clubhouse in Villawall. I remember saying to Pat, but 10 o'clock, hey, love, I'm absolutely gone. One more, we've got to go. And this is the first time I'd seen my mother and father for a long time.
Yeah.
And I can remember about 6 o'clock in the morning, still there. The place full to the rafters. We'll have one more. That's she always calls me, we'll have one more. But that kind of, yeah, and again, on a serious point, you know, coming home and to see Pat that way. And the Lions tour meant everything to me. We were the first side in history to win the Test Series.
Yeah.
And then I have to be honest, gents, rugby life, it can be great, and life can be sadder many times. And, do you know, about 2 months later, in Morrison Hospital, we had our first child, little baby boy. And I thought, God, this is the finest thing. Rugby doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Sadly, within 2 days, we lost our baby boy. He died in us. And it puts everything into perspective. Mm. I didn't care about rugby. Yeah. Didn't care about the Lions. I'd seen this little boy and I pictured that. Yeah. And I think it helped me to become a man, really. From years, the man had been to South Africa, thought he was the bee's knees.
Mm.
Now I'm human. I'm like everybody else. I'm grieving. And that taught me a great lesson. But, you know, that's what it's all about. But the good thing about it then, on the happier side, I didn't want to know rugby for about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Then the boys from Stradi, Llanelli boys, came and said, hey, come on, come down and have a game, come training. Yeah. Went to training, started back playing. And then that brought me back into life. And a year later, we have another birth of our first son. He's perfect and everything's great again.
Yeah.
But it shows you the ups and downs. Of 1 minute you think you're the king, being out to South Africa and done all this. The next minute you're down there. So, you know, great times and then sad times.
But I always think we're biased because we're rugby people. But I always think that in these difficult times, I think rugby is actually one of the best support networks you can be a part of, isn't it?
Well, if it wasn't for those boys from Stradi in those days, who came up the house and said, hey, come train in, just give it a go. I went down and I thought, I'm beginning to enjoy this again. And then they came back to me, playing a game, the first game. bit of a good game. I think that's great. Pat came down to watch, and all of a sudden, we kind of said, and do you know one thing that people don't realise? I remember the great Carwin James, easily the greatest coach I've ever known, the man manager, comes on to me. I'm broke, I'm working in the steelworks. Pat's expecting the child now. He said, what are you doing in 2 weeks' time? I said, I don't know, not a lot really. He said, well, I booked a holiday in Spain for you and Pat. I said, Carwin, I can't afford to go to Barry Island, you know, Spain. Yeah. He said, the club are paying for everything. Nice hotel, get out there. And I tell you, we both cried for two nights, and then we kind of said, life's got to go on, and bang, we came back. But that's where rugby again, and I said to Carwin, and this is where I think he was such a great coach, Carwin, whatever you want from me in life, again, especially on the pitch, I will give it in bucket loads for you. And that's why I think all the players respected he did. A lot of things like that, which people don't realise about, which made him not only a great coach, but a great man manager as well.
Yeah, and breeds loyalty, doesn't it?
Without a doubt.
Just moving back to the South Africa tour, it'd be wrong of us not to ask about the 99 call that Willie John McBride brought in, and how did that come about?
I think, to be honest, gents, that, you know, when we had our first team talk, Willie had said things like, he got on the kind of platform stage there, we were all down there. Only one coach, Sid Miller, three times a prop forward. Nobody else, no doctors, no physios, nobody else. We're all thinking, oh, we get stitches here. We got GPR, or Ken Kennedy to stitch us up, oh, God, you know. But Willie said things like, men, and I can't do his lint, I wish I could, just come back 71, beating the All Blacks in their own backyard. Oh. Yeah. The boys are pumped up now. But men, I've never won a series out here in South Africa. We've been too nice, gentlemen. These 22 stone prop forwards from the African country have come out and they've bullied us. They've really knuckled into us and sort of sorted us out. I'm going to say to you the next 3.5-4 months, there's going to be lots of fighting, kicking and punching out this door. Oh, Bobby's off his chair. He's sparring like Marlon. He's with
whacking
Willie.
Whacking the kit man before he's start.
Yes, yes.
Take the chef out.
The two guys from South Africa with a kit. He's armoured them. They're out there. First South African's dead. And I think that kind of attitude. And, you know, what Willie had decided as well. Do you know, we had South African referees, no neutral referees at all. And it was hard at times because I'm not saying they were cheating, but any 50-50 decision, we knew where it was going. Yeah. So Willie'd worked out as well. If we fight back you against me, the British Lion against one of their players, South African or a provincial player, there's only one guy going to be sent off. That's the British Lions player. But he said, boys, if we all, when I shout the words 99, we all pile in. Meaning, he thought at the time, like all the forwards, you know, they can't send 8 forwards off. But when he did shout 99, the lunatic JPR has to run from full back to fight. Yeah. Even Andy Irvine on the wing, the lovely, smart-looking boy, used to come in and he'd be jabbing and sparring away. Not hitting anybody, but having a go. But there were some brutal battles there. But as Bobby said, if you have a front row like we did have, Mighty Mouse McLaughlin, Bobby Windsor, and the immense Fran Cotton, they would take no prisoners. And I think when we got that respect up front, and if it turned nasty, bang, we knew that everybody was in together. So the ref was like, well, he didn't know where to turn. So there were some horrific battles out there.
Yeah.
Some brawls which probably were not great for the game of rugby union football, but they had to be done, I think, to sort of make South Africa say, hey, these boys, they're not going to take any stick.
Yeah.
We've got a fight in our hands now. And I can remember winning the third test. We won a series.
Yeah.
The first side in history. And do you know what was great about it, gents? And perhaps not many people know about this. We'd won a hell of a night. And then in the sort of local the dinner afterwards, the great Danny Craven, he is Mr. South Africa, the greatest man they say ever been. And do you know the one sad thing in that evening? He presented some South African players with their blazers. And he says, this gives me no pleasure or credit to give you the South African blazers. Do you really deserve it? These boys took it. And they're proud men. They've been
given their best.
They've done their best. They've given their all, their stitches all over the place. And you know, we had the greatest time ever. And by the time we came to the fourth test, I must admit, we had won the series.
Yeah.
And if we could win it, great. But so what? Let's give it our best shot and really try. Mm. And even then, Slat scores and scores in the last minute, puts the ball between his legs. We all jump, try to win the game. And the referee goes, no try, no ground. Yeah. And he's running off. I'm calling him all. The name's going swearing. And he said, man, I could live here for the rest of my life. Like, you know, and he's off and he's gone.
So
13
one.
All. So, yeah, it was a special tour. I think one of the great tours because of the length of it, led by an inspirational man in Willie John McBride.
Yeah.
And then you don't realise, do you know, we play against England, Scotland, Ireland, etc. You play against players you respect, you think they're very good.
Yeah.
But when you go on a tour with them, and you play with them, and when you think, I'll throw one name to you, you'd remember Andy Ripley.
Oh, yeah.
Magnificent. On the hard grounds of South Africa, he was the one ruin. Yeah. But he couldn't get near the test.
Yeah.
The great, late Mervyn Davies kept him out. Mm. So that's the quality of player you're playing with. Edwards at scrum half. Oh, incredible players. So to mix and join with them was an absolute joy, really. And to come back, as I say, as the first side, to have won the series was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think as a former forward, I'm having a big Lions fan, like everyone else. When I think of great Lions forwards, I think about Jono, and I think about Willie John McBride. And I've only ever seen Willie John McBride talk on TV, but he's absolutely mesmerising. He's a bit like Anthony Hopkins, actually. He's got a presence about him. But over the course of a four-month tour, you know, was he absolutely the lead man, or was he mucking in with the boys too? I know you would celebrate, you'd probably drink a bit more in those days. Was he at the forefront, leading that too?
I think Willie'd been on, as I said, there was his fifth tour, and I think he'd been a bit of a lunatic on the first tour. So as far as that. And I think he now was at the age of about 34. So he had to look after his body. And I mean, Willie'd be in bed sometimes 9 o'clock, his captain's room, taking his rest and his body right for the next day. And he was the leader. Never put a foot wrong, always supported the players, demanded respect back from them, and he had this aura about him. I mean, he'd come into a team meeting at 11 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and he just didn't have to say a word, really. He'd just walk around, and he'd say something. Are we going to die for that badge this afternoon? Oh, God, will he get there?
Yeah.
And he had this lovely little...
Pull trees up at breakfast time,
God, and he was brilliant, you know. He led from the front, didn't want any favours from anybody, just total respect. And I think, as I say, when we won that third test, job done. And I can remember him saying, just one quick story, first test Cape Town, mud all over the place. I'd never seen conditions like it, because you're really expecting hard grounds out there. And he says, man, have a look in their eyes as you're in the tunnel. And he said, you'll see some fear in their eyes because we've wrecked South Africa, you know. Yeah. And I'm looking into these 22 stone forwards. And I'm thinking, I hope that's fear. Oh, no, brutality, because I don't want to go there. But it made you think, you know, what these forwards were going to go through for 80 minutes. And luckily, Edwards dropped a brilliant goal and we won. But that's one man, I think, deserves to go down in Lions history as one of the great forwards, probably with Martin Johnson, that's ever worn the jersey.
So, I mean, he captained the tour in 74, then you captained it in 77. Is it the same format of finding out, or did you know a little bit before?
Again, gents, you wouldn't believe it. I had a phone call from a former player and said, well done. And I said, what are you talking about? You're captain of the Lions. He said, oh, great. I said, who told you that? He said, you're in London. Somebody said in the family. Oh, it's great. I said, that's marvellous, you know. And then somebody phoned me up from the IRB, Bruce Lyons again. I said, well done, you've been captain. And can I say to you, gentlemen, and you probably won't believe me, it was the heart-changing moment in my life. Because in my mind, I'd had a little baby boy now, by this time was three.
Yeah.
I was at the time of my life for them. And I thought, do I need to go to New Zealand for 3.5-4 months? And honestly, my heart was saying, don't go.
Really?
My head was saying, don't go.
Really?
Stay. So all of me, in a way, was it. And then Pat said, you're captain, you know. You'll never have honour like that in your life again. Can you imagine telling your son, Stephen was about 2 or 3 by this time, you know, that you turned down the Lions captaincy? Oh, God. And I thought hard about it. And after about 2 days, I said, I'll accept the captaincy. To this day, and I said to Pat, look, I want you to send a letter every day out with a photo of Stephen, photo every day. So these would arrive in New Zealand 2 or 3 days later and they'd come out or whatever. And I said, look at these photos. And I thought, why have I asked for this in a way? Because he was changing every other day. And I was thinking, should I be at home? Is it my job to be looking after my son after losing one? And a lot of that went through my mind many times on that long tour. But, you know, when you look back, how the heck can you say no to being a British Lions captain? And I had to go on, give it a crack, you know. I didn't play my best rugby on tour.
No.
I lost the series. Mm. But, you know, in life you give it a shot. And sometimes you come up, sometimes you come down. And that's the decision.
You turned down the captaincy a couple of times, didn't you? For the
Lions captaincy, I was really busy. I had a new dog.
Yeah, got a new car.
I got a new barbecue. I couldn't bear to leave it.
But in terms of like when you meet up with a squad, nowadays you've seen a massive itinerary of like the kit or inventory of kit
Oh yeah,
the squad get.
Yeah.
And what did you guys get? Did you get free boots? Did you get any perks that went with it?
Laptops and carry bags.
Do you know, I was in London recently watching Sam Warburton be made captain, and they had more gear there in 2 days.
Yeah.
There, we went out. We didn't have a tracksuit, no training kit. No togs, no boots. We had to go to Lily White's, I think, some shop in London.
Yeah. Yeah.
Measure us for blazers.
That's the Piccadilly Circus.
Right, yeah. Measure us for blazers there. Just flew out. That was that.
So what'd you train in then?
Well, we just took our own jerseys, our own sort of shorts and socks. And I can remember there was a great man from Ireland called Moss Keane, as mad as Hatter. And Moss came on this Lions tour to New Zealand, knowing the weather was going to be horrible, but we didn't know horrible. And he brought one training shirt with him. And he was, you know, he was soaking wet in training. He'd put it over a really swear like mad in Ireland, have a few cans. Jesus, and they expect us to train tomorrow. And he'd come out the next morning and he was still soaking wet. Put it on and he didn't give a damn. But that's how hard it was. And I can remember the first game we played in a place called Warrapa Bush. It was freezing cold, the coldest day I've ever played rugby union football in. The rain was lashing down, and we played some great stuff. We were chuffed, came off the pitch, and you know, got in the dressing rooms, let's get in the showers. And I don't know whether it was a ploy or what, they were freezing cold.
Lads.
They played blankets around us.
It's good for you, that, isn't it? Ice
bucket, Get a bit of heat in first, like, you know. Yeah. And, you know, but that was it. You sort of... They were great characters. We had a magnificent pack of forwards. No forwards coach.
Really?
John Dawes, the general coach.
Yeah.
And then after a while, somebody said, well, Terry Cobner, the outstanding Pontypool back row forward, who was a pack leader for Wales, you better start taking the forwards. Oh, cheers, that's great. I'm fighting against Tony Neary to get the number 7 jersey. And Tony Neary, believe me, was a great player. Yeah. So they had to fight, and Cobb took the forwards. And really, we had a dominant pack behind the scrum. Do you know, Tom, you played in the centre. I'll take a lot of the blame, maybe going across for whatever. But we missed one man on that trip, Ray Gravel.
Yeah.
Ray Gravel brought was down the middle of the field, like Jamie Roberts does today.
Yeah, yeah.
Bring the play. Yeah. So they were just shuffling across because we had two great centres, Ian McGeechan, but he was a runner. Yeah. Stevie Fennec or Dave Birch, they were runners. So I think, and I begged Grav to come on that trip because he was a cert to go on there, but he was going through a bit of a rough period. And with Ray, if he had a bad shoulder, it meant, you know, that was it. You know, in his mind, you know. And he said, I'm not coming. And I think people don't realise we missed a centre just to go right down there. You know, we had the great Michael Gibson.
Could
do things like that.
But
that one man, and you've played enough there, Tom, to say, well, who's going to go straight down there?
Who's going to get us over the game line?
The game line. Who's going to pull these outside backs in a bit, you know? And, you know, I can remember the last test, and we had a chat amongst ourselves, and we said, right, we were down 2-1. And it was one interception on the first test. We had 3 or 4 men, and I can't quite remember. I wouldn't say if I did remember. Bang, out, 3 of us, nobody in front of us, one man to beat. Underneath the post, and I think we won the series. Grant Batty, the little ginger famous in the 73 game where Tommy taps him on the head and he was mad. He just takes a punt and comes in, bang, intercepts the ball. I go, God. And he's underneath the post, lose the game. Win the second, lose the third. And in the fourth test, I remember saying, right, we've been running the ball everywhere now, playing lovely stuff. Let's kick the ball all afternoon. Let's let the forwards dominate and we'll just boot it down all game. And about 2 minutes to go, we're winning. So I'm thinking, 2-2 is not bad coming home after all.
Yeah.
And I get the ball. Jensen, to this day, I swear, as God's my maker, I don't know, I always wanted to run from there because I was a lunatic, you know, I'd run from anywhere. But I remember saying, come on, think. And I slammed the ball about 60 metres downfield. Now, I don't know if I was inside my 22 or outside. To this day, I can't remember. One of their guys got it, and he looked around, didn't know what to do, and just thumped it back in the air anyway. And it came in our 22, and one of the boys dropped the ball. Jesus. Mm. They kicked it on. They dived over, scored the try. The worst moment of my rugby life.
Really?
Worst moment of my rugby life, to realise, after all that effort, giving it the best shot, the forwards magnificent.
Yeah.
And we were going home 3-1. Sounded like a hammering.
Yeah.
Could quite easily been 2-2 or even gone our way. But that's the reality of rugby. That's where you have to take your chances. And at that level we've all played, you don't get a second chance.
Do you find that as a retired player, you remember those moments almost more clearly than the big victories? You remember those horror moments?
Oh, without a doubt, you know, I can look back on the 74th one and think, yeah, remember that through the test, no, GG, got to just, what happened there? And, you know, because you have so many victories on those occasions. Playing for Wales, so many times we were victorious. Mm. That, but when you have those bad moments where you think, oh, God,
yeah,
you know, you're looking for these boys now to go home with their heads held up high, to go home with their families and yeah. say, we've drawn the series. But here you are, one sort of drop, kick ahead. And, we, you know, I can remember one of the New Zealanders diving over and they went berserk. And I remember looking at their faces. They couldn't believe it. They weren't in the game. And yet they yeah. won the game. And, you know, I think the crowd went absolutely berserk because a lot of things had happened, you know. The Lions had beaten them in 71
yeah.
in their own backyard. Then I think people don't realise the effect, gents. There was a prop forward who came in 72 called Keith Murdoch.
Mm.
Believe me, he was some tough cookie. Mm. And of course, he gets sent home fighting in Cardiff after the game with a security guard.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the All Black players this day have never forgiven the New Zealand management for sending one of their own home.
Yeah.
And apparently when they come to Cardiff now on a trip, they go into that same...
Oh, really?
Hotel. They all get together, have a pint, and they toast Keith Murdoch.
Really?
That's how the All Blacks are so tight. So those kind of things come back in my memory, and it was much tougher playing in 77 than it was in 69 with Wales, for instance, because Wales and New Zealand had this great rapport, but all of a sudden, losing in 71, Murdoch sent home, they'd gone out to South Africa to win a Test series, came back.
Yeah.
Beaten out in South Africa, so they were desperate for victory. And some of the things that went on the tour, you know, remain with me. They'd be private in my mind for a long time, but saddened me a little bit as well, off the field and on the field. Mm. But at the end of the day, when you go on the British Lions tour, it doesn't matter, you know, what you do in midweek.
Yeah,
you come home and you say we won the Test series.
Yeah,
we didn't on that tour.
Can I ask you, like, nowadays, obviously rugby is fairly professional, you know, with training, with diet. What was it like on tour? You know, what sort of food did you eat? You know, how often were you training?
To give you an idea, gents, you know, it was almost incredible that sort of after 4 or 5 weeks, you know, being captain was hard enough, much hard. Then the boys would come on and say, Phil, this can't go on. I said, what do you want? We're having dinner. Look at the menu tonight again. Soup, chicken, custard again. Oh, we've got our a la carte, for God's sake. We're packing every ground out. So we go on.
He's Welsh, so don't want a la carte. They're so posh, aren't they?
I go to the management.
You're like custard,
yeah.
And they say, well, we put it to the New Zealand Rugby Union and they put it there. So they meet for a fortnight to decide whether we can have more choice at the food, you know, on the menu in the evening. So little small things like that. Being in Wellington, they call it the Windy City.
Yeah.
We've had a gutsful now. We want to get out of this place. And all of a sudden, we've all got our gear ready to go from the hotel. All right, boys, just relax. Airport's shut down for a few hours. The winds are too strong. And those kind of things,
they
knock you back a bit, you know. Nigel Orton, the second row, was going to be vital in our cause. Big England second row. Damages his thumb, wants to go home, you know. And the doctor said, well, we'll keep him with you 3-4 weeks, and he's right, but no. And there's those small little things, you know. Kit, soaking wet, drying it on radiators, you know, putting it on the next day. And you know, I always think that, it doesn't matter how professional you are, and I hope these boys get all the professional help they can get. It's what you do for 80 minutes on the pitch.
Yeah,
leading up to it, you know, can be vitally important. I take no, you know, I don't make any excuses about wet kit and everything. We're on there for 80 minutes. It's men against men. And, you know, we prove by beating them in the second test that they're beatable. But we didn't, you know, clinch the series. And at the end of the day, you'll always be judged on your test matches.
Yeah, and when you're skippering that too, you talk about getting approached by the lads saying the menu's not good enough or we need more kit or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But did you take certain learnings as a captain from Willie John McBride, maybe the greatest captain ever, Jono maybe,
yeah.
but did you take learnings from him or was it all about doing it your own style?
I think, you know, Willie was a different animal to me. This was his fifth tour when I was with him in 74. This is only my second. And I'm really learning a bit about tour. You think you've known it all by being there in South Africa 3 or 4 months, but you go to a different country, different attitudes, you know, and really, you know, being captain, for me, one of the greatest things was having a private room to myself at times, because when you're with the lads, like you forwards, and you're snoring your head off and coming in drunk all over, you know, I was having peace and quiet. But at the same time, could be a very lonely place.
Yeah.
You can nobody to say, hey, like, I'm a bit cheesed off tonight. Do you fancy it? You couldn't do it. Whatever. Yeah. And I found that quite hard. So maybe within myself, I learned a lot of lessons that you have to deal with men. If you're captain and skipper, you know, small things, for instance, you know. And I can remember being on tour. This is completely perhaps away from it. And we got two weeks to go, and the management came on to me, Dodd Borelli, great guy, his manager, and said, oh, by the way, lads, but before he came on to me, he said, it's the Queen's Jubilee when we get back. So in a fortnight's time, when we arrive back in sort of early August, in September, we're going to play against the Barbarians. I took them. Oh, I said, that's great. I said, and have you seen the side they picked? And I looked at the side, JPR Williams, Gerald Davis, Gareth Edwards, the French front row and the French back row of Reeves, Skrell and Bastien. I said, fair play to them. They've really given it to the British boys. I said, I said, okay, we play them. So I said, what's the arrangements? And this is how typical it was in rugby. Well, you'll be flying, sorry, you boys in my airline, you'll be coming up. We're meeting in Richmond on the Thursday, and we'll train, and then your wives can fly or come by car on Friday. But I'm saying, Dad, we haven't seen them for months. For God's sake, why can't they travel with us?
Yeah.
You know, or the IRB won't allow it. The internet. I said, well, I'm telling you now, the boys have a chat. They're not going to play the game. But it's for the Queen. We don't care. We're not playing unless the wives travel with us. And there's one small point which adds to, you're on tour and you think, you don't need this. And for one simple thing, why can't your wife travel with you?
Yeah.
Come with you. Mm. And, you know, we went out that day. The wives came with us. Sorry, and I'm diverting a little bit from the tour. But we were determined, because Gareth was there and he was, you know, he was great, you know. They, I think, took it a little bit, not lightly, but with the barbers, and you know, and we said, we're going to beat these sorcerers, and we beat them quite convincingly and took them. And that was a little bit of a boost in a way. Doesn't go back to say, we lost, you know, that makes up for losing the series. But I think they kind of said, hey, these boys aren't bad. And of course, we played with them. And so that's those small things, which, you know, requests that we have to play those games. And they all add up in your mind and everything. But at the end of the day, you have to run a game. I captained the Scarlets for 6 seasons. Yeah. They did my way. Yeah. You know, this is the way we're going to play it. You know, I remember saying against Lennon Welsh, who were a great side, playing on the Boxing Day, boys, we're going to take these on and run in at them. And somebody said, oh, I think we should take them on up front because they've got great backs. Hey, let's give it a go. 15 against 15, and made the best side win. And that was the way I approached the kind of the certain games.
Yeah.
Now you go up to Ponty on a Wednesday night, Pontypridd, and you say, boys, every man for themselves. Like, you know what I mean? Don't give me no ball unless it's good ball. Right? Yeah. And that's how you treat the different games, different places, you know. Yeah. That's sort
of me. How fit would you say the Lions team were in compared to like the New Zealand team? Because you were a pretty fit bloke, weren't you? You know, you took to conditioning. Yes. Did you beat Alan Pascoe in a hurdles race?
I did superstars a few times, and I did quite well on the sprints, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, isn't it amazing in life? I come from Ballymore, down the road here. We did some 60-metre indoor sprint competition in superstars, and they used blocks. I'd never used blocks in my life.
Yeah.
They blew the whistle. The guy had gone 10
yards.
But I think we were as fit as the All Blacks because we'd become a nation. I think since 71, that sort of spurred us on. And when the Barbarians beat the All Blacks in 73, it was another kick in the teeth for them because, in a way, we were saying 9 of those were British Lions.
Yeah.
So I think we were very, very fit, as fit as the New Zealanders. Because when you look at the New Zealanders, I remember, you appreciate this, playing as a young boy against the likes of Colin Meads, Wilson Windery, and all these great legends. Mm. And I'm not being rude, I looked before the game, walking in his shorts, just crossing it, was a prop called Ken Gray.
Yeah.
Still regarded as one of the great props ever in New Zealand history.
Mm.
And he was like that. He wasn't huge, he was with me, he was a farmer. And talking the Welsh props after, strongest prop they'd ever faced.
Yeah.
So I don't think they were sort of fitter. They worked on the farms, and actually we worked in mines in different ways. But in 77, Tom, we were as fit as them. Yes, I think they adapted to conditions. They played better rugby, and that's what got them the series.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about the try in 73.
Yeah.
Now, firstly, how many times have you seen it, do you reckon?
Yes.
Yeah,
thousands of times.
Yeah, I expect you probably arrived today thinking, I hope they don't ask me about that, because I've been asked about that every day for the last 30 years. But actually, did that try change your life at all? Because it's the sort of thing now that, as things spread so quickly now with social media and digital media, that will change someone's life, and that the whole world will see that instantly. But did that change your life?
Presumably, you practice it in training as well, yeah?
Yeah, good call.
Hurricane boys, here we go.
You know, we didn't train that well for that game, but the Lions are the nucleus of the side there.
Yeah.
And I remember Carwin saying to me, this is how amateur we were. Mm. He wasn't allowed to coach the Barbarians officially. You could stand on the touchline at Penarth on the Friday and just shout the few
That's
things.
Right, you used to train there, didn't you?
Incredible. Yeah. You know, and then we come to the game, and he says, just before the game, Phil. And he used to speak Welsh to me because I didn't know it. But he said, quote, just express yourself. And I had the added advantage because we played against him in 72, which was the greatest game of my life, which I ever played. Went to Netley, my beloved town, beat the All Blacks 9-3. And, you know, the pubs were drunk dry by 8 o'clock. There wasn't a pint left in Llanelli. Yeah. That's how mad they went. But there was a number 7 playing that day. His name was Alistair Scone. And he came at me like a bullet all game. And I said, well, look at that. And he says, die fast. Yeah. I said, think you're silly, so and so. Well, you know, take it easy a bit, you know. Next thing, he'd be at you again. Bang, bang. So when we come to the 73 game, we ran on and everything there. The kick comes down here. And if that had been Wales, I must be honest, my first thought would have been, can I clear it sort of towards the halfway line? But I came, looked up for a second, and the first thing I see, number 7, Alistair Scone, coming at me 100 miles an hour. So I thought, you silly bugger. Bang, Matador. And he's passed me.
Yeah.
But I didn't realise there were 3 All Blacks coming behind him, you know what I mean? So JPR takes all the credit. I throw a long pass out to JPR. He takes a high tackle from Brian Williams. John says how brave he was to take that tackle, you know. And then an Englishman got involved. What the heck he was doing there, I don't know. John Pullin, who'd never passed the ball in his life.
Yeah.
He got the ball and went, well, thank you very much, I got there.
Get rid of that.
And then Edwards scores the try, gets made a sir. Yeah. I've got arthritis in 2 knees for my party. That's right.
What have you got to show for
sure, exactly. But what was great, we went to Canada next year with Wales. And Canada, was rugby was small in those days out there. And the boys, the players themselves would take us back to a pub maybe after a game, have food for us and everything. They put that film on of the All Blacks playing against the Barbarians, and they said, this inspires us. And you know the greatest thing I can say now, perhaps, it was a great try and a great moment, and I hope everybody enjoyed it. But when I go to a function, which gives me the greatest pleasure, a young lad, well-spoken, polite, will come up to me and say, can I shake your hand before dinner? And I'll say, yes. And my father and I watched that just before we came out of the house.
Brilliant.
And I think, well, God, if I've done something right in life, I've inspired somebody maybe to try something and have a crack at playing rugby. Yeah, one of the great occasions in life and just part of a special. And I think, you know, gents, we mustn't forget the part Cliff Morgan played in his commentary.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. Excited all the crowd. And what made it special, I knew it was a special day because the crowd would have been mixed. There would be Englishmen out there. But it was like playing in front of Wales. They were absolutely berserk. And I knew there was going to be a great occasion and a great win.
And here we are in the Quinnell Lounge and the part he played and all that stuff. I remember it,
And it was funny, Gerald Davis dropped out to the morning in that game and Mervyn Davis dropped out. I think they both had colds or something like that.
Hangover.
And they were sitting in the stand and they were saying,
oh no.
I think we missed
part of history. Life changer, lads.
You know,
life changer.
And that was it. And it was great. And I think the Barbers actually allowed us to keep the jerseys. I mean, when you played for them, I played 22 times against the Barbarians. When you played against East Midlands or Penarth, you used to rip your jerseys, you came through the door, you know, that goes back in. They were giving us the jersey. I said, God, you've got number 10 of the Barbarians. So, you know, that was a new as well. So, yeah, it was a great night.
Oh, fantastic.
What do you think, Phil, of the Lions' chances now in New Zealand?
Do you know, I've got this feeling that they can have a very, very good chance.
Mm.
I think they've got a huge nucleus of very good forwards. I mean, when they can leave Joe Lawlsbury out of the second row, must be strong because he was magnificent in the Six Nations. Mm. I think, you know, if we can stay clear of injuries, then Warren Gatland plays his plan, because I think sometimes we get caught up, you know, in the New Zealand, well, this is the way they play it, we've got to try and play it. And what gives me a little bit of hope, Wales went out there on tour for 40, 50 minutes in the first two tests. We matched them, and then they went up a gear, and they played magnificently well. Third test, they wiped us out. So I'm just praying. I think the first test is vital.
Mm.
If we lose the first test, I think it could be a hard talk, because the midweek sides will then target us anymore.
Yeah.
Let us win that first test.
Mm.
And I got this feeling that Gatland, who's a canny man, has picked a side. You know, and I don't know what test side he'll pick, but believe me, I think he'll have a pack of forwards.
He will.
Which will be hungry, mean. You know.
Yeah. They picked 41 players. Yeah. How many were picked in your era?
Always 30, Tom.
Okay.
Yeah. Was it?
Always 30.
Wow.
But the great thing, which I think is important, and maybe Sir Clive has got a different view on this, he said, this is the test team on 10 others. We're off. See you boys there.
Yeah.
The tours we went on, the midweek team, were as important, if not more important, than the test team. Because if they kept on winning, they kept on pushing us.
Yeah.
Because you knew we couldn't relax, because you were after my position.
Yeah.
And we went in after the game and give him a hug and bang, we've won again, we're on the road again. So I just hope Warren can say, I think he was, I had a brief chat to Mary recently, and he said out in Australia, they played so many easy games in the midweek.
Yeah.
The boys weren't tested. Yeah. They didn't feel like real Lions.
Doesn't bind you together, does it?
No. So somebody. I think these hard games, they think, oh, look, we're up against the Crusaders, the Hurricanes. Mm. Whew, you boys are going to win for us today. Because if we're going to go in the test match on Saturday, losing this game, we're going to be on a bit of a... So I think it's great that they've got these hard games. And I think he being what he is, will bind them together. And as I say, I've just got this feeling, when I look at Vinopoul, Faletau, all these great... Those two fighting... Who's been playing him, right?
Yeah.
You know, incredible. That was an incredible player.
Yeah.
And nobody sort of is picking him for the side.
And if they take the right off him, Ross Moriarty will be in there whacking people, you know.
Exactly.
So, CJ Stander.
CJ Stander.
A fantastic place to step in there. So every fight in those spots, I'll tell you what, you know, training's going to be tasty.
Yeah.
There'll be guys out to prove a point out there. And I think when we go right back to 74, just to start the talk, Sid Miller demanded that scrummaging was going to be the one thing the forwards concentrated on.
Yeah.
So they didn't do any Morley and Ruckey and
beautiful
scrum.
Dream to
scrum.
Love that, don't you?
Dream to
dribbling.
And custard for dinner. And custard for dinner.
Yeah.
We spoke to Warren Gatland recently and he mentioned durability being a key aspect for these tours. So okay, the tour is nothing like as long as yours, but for these players, this is an intense period of games at the end of a long season. Now, he was saying you need durability because we want guys to be fit for all the games. We need guys to play test matches and play midweek, get themselves up, get out of bed and train for the other lads. So we need them to push themselves. So you get the feeling that he doesn't think it's going to be two separate squads. It's going to be one big team.
I'm actually thrilled with that because there's nothing worse than if you're not in that test team and you feel out of it, then you don't want to be part of the tour.
Yeah, you want to go home.
What am I doing here? Now, if you make those boys feel important and say, hey, boys, you're playing the Orange Free State today, you've got to beat them. You know, keep it going for us. And they're up for it. They come off the field and they're exhausted, but they think, hey, here I go. Great. And I used to say to some guys, hey, you may be pushed for this, you don't know. But, and that lifts them, you know, it keeps the whole team bonded together. And I'm just chuffed that Gatland's going to do that. Not, as I say to maybe 10, 12 blocks. Well, you go one side, we've got our 15.
Thanks for coming, sort of thing.
It's like in 2005, you know, like Clive had two buses and he'd be like, right, on bus one, Johnny Wilkinson, Paul O'Connell, Lawrence Lalalia, and you're waiting for your name, and like, bus two.
Tom Shanklin.
Shanklin.
You weren't even on bus two. Kit Van.
Yeah.
Shanklin. It's Shanklin. Timmy. Yeah. Tom. Thank you. Are you going down there, going to New Zealand?
I'm not going, no. I think,
you know, enough.
With sort of, I've got family commitments, grandchildren, which is brilliant. We've booked holidays, etc. And then I'm thinking, do I want to be in Wellington with 25,000 British supporters who are magnificent to spend all the money to go down there? But there's no escape. There's no, you know, it's going to be rugby for long. So
you can watch it on your TV your family.
I think I'll sample the delights of the go, of course. A couple of glasses of wine and watch it there.
Well, those tours you went on and the bonds you made and the friends you made sort of embodied, you know, these tours today and sort of set a precedent really for what's to come. So, I mean, thank you so much for taking time out and speaking to us and sharing your experience with us, because it's been so interesting listening to you.
And as soon as the cameras are off, we can talk about the nights out.
Yeah.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah,
real pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure, lads. Yeah, great to share some
stories. Thank you.
Thank you.